Saba, Saba. Saba, Saba.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. You're listening to Sava Sava by Carl Zero. Exciting day today. Did you catch the Golden Globes last Sunday? If you did, you probably saw the always edgy Margaret Cho playing a satirical character from North Korea. Well, she got a lot of online flack about that, and she's going to be on stage and studio shortly. Yes, yes, we're going to be talking to the Margaret Cho very, very soon. And with me is Adriana Bear, Artistic Director of Profile Theater. She's also here to talk about Profile's new season of Sarah Rule Plays. So stay tuned. Big day here on Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me via phone is the one and only Margaret Cho. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning.
Hey, Margaret. You are no stranger to controversy. You know that? You know that. But the latest about this character you played on the Golden Globes. And just to fill in for people who hadn't seen it, the North Korean general, it's a character you played who's a journalist from the magazine Movies Wow. Now, what do you make of all the comments and press you've been getting about that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because much of it is overwhelming praise. Like, actually, most people are saying it was the best part of the award ceremony, which I'm very proud of. I mean, I did it because I really believe in free speech. My family is all Korean. You know, we're, and North and South Korea used to just be Korea. It was all one country.
Right, right.
My family is actually from North and South Korea. You know, we're all kind of from there. And
you got blood on both sides.
In prison and in slavery to this totalitarian regime for 65 years. And the only weapon that we really have against any of that is comedy, or I do. And so it's alarming that so many allegations of racism come up when people usually in the media are so insensitive towards Asian stereotypes that they see, you know, they see them all the time and nothing happens, and then I do something and everybody goes crazy. That's racist.
Well, I think most of the negative comments did come from non-Asians, but Asians seem divided about the character as a stereotype. I think I personally thought it was fun to have you as a character, you know, and you got to have the photo with Meryl Streep taken by Michael Keaton and photobombed by Benedict Cumberbatch. I mean, how often does that happen, right?
It's great. It's really fun. I was the only Asian person at the event.
Well, that's what I wanted to. Yeah, that's what
I
wanted. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because I think that's the racist part of it. Me personally, you know, because it made it cringeworthy for me because it was realizing there were no other Asians nominated or on stage as presenters, and so that to me was the big lack of Asian presence at the Golden Globes. Do you think this controversy has brought awareness to that?
I hope so. But there's always a lack of Asian presence everywhere in film and television. And, you know, this is a classic thing, you know, that we don't have a presence that is monumental ever. And so, you know, and that's an unfortunate thing. It's really the invisibility that we're trying to fight against. But every time I try to break through, I've been able to break through this kind of invisibility for 30 years. And every time I do it, I'm criticized for it. So I'm not necessarily that, concerned about this another time. You know, this happens every single time I do anything. And I don't really know why. I think it has something to do with the lack of images of Asian Americans. And once you see them, it's so shocking still. I don't know why.
Well, I think that you're under a microscope, aren't you, when you're the only one?
Yeah, I mean, you know, people are, I was looking at Korean magazine and they had sort of a Facebook post about the controversy. And yet on the cover of Korean is Randall, who played Kim Jong-un in the interview. Like, it's like the absolute, like, person who, you know, we're doing the exact same thing. And yet for some reason, I'm being criticized for it. Maybe it's because I'm a woman. I was always thought that. That was true ever since I started, that I would have, like, a very difficult time, you know, kind of breaking through and ended up having more of a difficult time because I'm a woman and because maybe Koreans want to be represented by a man, which is, it's just a weird thing. I'm not sure why it's like that.
Well, was there ever any discussion about you presenting an award as yourself?
No. This was a secret thing that I have not presented at the Golden Globe since 1993. This is the first time I didn't get invited. And I was not invited by the Foreign Press Association. I was invited specifically by Tina and Amy. So it was their secret part. They didn't tell anyone. And so there was not space for me to be in the ceremony anyway.
That's shocking to me. You know, that's really shocking to me. So really, Amy and Tina basically brought you on.
Yeah, it was their wanting to include me in the conversation and include me in the joke of it, which I think is really brilliant.
Well, I think it was a commentary in of itself, wasn't it, then? Would you ever play this character again?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's something, it's basically a take on my mother, which I do all the time.
It did sound very familiar.
Yeah. It's not something that I would ever shy away from. I've been doing it for 30 years. I've been doing it in my work and kind of just all over my work, you know, whether it's stand-up comedy or acting. I mean, it's just a character that I've played forever. I would never shy away from representing my family and where I come from and who I am. Why should I? And why should anyone? Why? I don't understand that.
No regrets.
No, why? I mean, there's really no point because there's just, the regret is like, how do I regret my skin or my identity or my heritage? Is that what the regret is supposed to be about? Should I regret who I came from or who I come from or where I come from?
Absolutely not, Margaret Cho. Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any final words to say about all these criticisms that you've gotten?
It's racist.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it's racist, and my response is totally sorrow that people don't see it and that they may recognize it at some point, but, you know, it's the shock of seeing an Asian face again, you know, and that's not fair. You know, I think it's really unfortunate.
It is unfortunate, and the fact that you have not been asked formally to be on the Golden Globes, you know, mm-hmm. is also unfortunate. And I hope that they rectify that, you know. You come on as Margaret Cho because you deserve that.
I would like that. I would love that. I mean, it's fun. It's fun to be a part of it. I really love Tina and Amy. I enjoyed the event. And, you know, it's really the only thing anybody is talking about.
It really is.
That is something to be conscious of. Of all those huge stars, of all the stuff that was happening, I'm the only thing that made a difference. So,
that's kind of you know, I'd have to say that's kind of good, you know, for you especially.
So.
I mean, you've got a new show too. The TLC network has a new show that you are one of the four women on. It's called All About Sex, and I hope you're enjoying that.
I am. It's on Saturdays at 11 o'clock. It's a sex advice talk show on TLC, and it's really, really great. It's lots of fun.
Well, it sounds a while just by looking at some of the clips. And I hope to see you in Portland again soon. You know, I don't see any plans yet, but you are a favorite here. You know that.
Yes, I do. I come back pretty often, so I really love it there.
All right. Well, Margaret Cho, one thing is clear. You always go for it. You take risks. You give it your all, and kudos to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us today on Stage and Studio, Margaret.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
That was the daring Margaret Cho, and you can find out more about her at margaretcho.com. You can hear this interview again later today at stageandstudio.org. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. With me is Adriana Baer, Artistic Director of Profile Theater, to talk about her new season. It's an exciting day to have you here, Adriana.
It sure is.
What did you think about that interview?
Oh, you know, I think Margaret is an incredibly strong woman, and I appreciate her honesty. I think that it is fascinating that that is what we are talking about now. I thought it was very interesting to see three such strong women represented
at the Golden Globes
in those key photographs of Margaret with Tina and Amy. I do question whether she would be receiving the same kind of criticism or if we would be pushing back as much if she was a man.
It was a good point.
It's an interesting question.
Well, speaking of strong women, Profile Theater selects one playwright a year to devote a single season to. And this year, you've chosen the MacArthur-winning playwright Sarah Rule.
That's right.
And it looks like a very strong season, too. Mm-hmm. So tell us about the decisions that went into selecting her as a playwright and the season itself.
Yeah. Sarah is a really incredible human being, as well as a brilliant, brilliant writer. She started as a poet and then found playwriting in her early 20s. And so she brings a lot of poetry into her writing. But the thing I love the most about Sarah's work is that she writes what it feels like to be a human being in the world. So her work is not always necessarily super straightforward and realistic necessarily, but the emotions and the images that she brings forth feel very relatable. And she has this ability to do that balance between the sort of mundane everyday life and the emotional depth of what we go through being a person on the planet every day. Sarah is actually the second most produced writer in the country right now.
Really?
Yeah. And I find it funny still that people aren't as familiar with her name and her work.
Is it because she's all woman?
I feel that it might be.
We have a theme going here. But I think that's partly true,
mm-hmm.
You know?
I do too.
Because she is produced a lot, and she is a name that comes up quite often in seasons, mm-hmm. You know, throughout the country.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. That's interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Now, the main stage opens with Dead Man's Cell Phone.
That's right.
Now, I saw a production of this at Oregon Shakespeare Festival a couple years ago, and it really is a fun thriller-type comedy.
It is.
And it comments on the digital world and the difficulty in communicating, too.
Yeah.
What makes you excited about this play?
Oh, I just love this play. It is so... it is so... I'm right in the middle of rehearsals right now, and I always find that when I'm right in the middle of rehearsals, I'm the least articulate about a project because there's so many ideas floating around. And that's partially because what Sarah does is she puts lots and lots of styles and lots of imagery on stage all at the same time. And it's our job to find the through line through that. I was actually listening to KBOO this morning, and somebody, someone was speaking about Dr. Martin Luther King, and there was this beautiful quote that said, "We need to move from a thing-centered society to a person-centered society." And that's a lot about what this play is. We go from having technology and this object, the cell phone, where we think we're going to be connecting more and more truthfully and more easily with each other and with our loved ones because we have this thing that we can be attached to all the time. But what Sarah examines in the play is if that's really true and whether it's the person-to-person connections that are the more deep and the more honest. And I think she makes a pretty strong case for throwing away our cell phones and getting back in the room talking to each other. It's not a political play by
any
means, but it is about that.
It was a little bit ahead of its time because it's a couple years old, too. But there is talk of how we are so connected or so wired, mm-hmm. and yet we aren't connected on a person-to-person basis.
Right. Or we're losing touch.
We're losing touch. Mm-hmm. And we're more isolated in many ways.
That's right.
And that's the whole purpose in some ways of theater is building that community. And
exactly.
Having people come face to face together. Oh my gosh.
And that's a big thing about Sarah's work as well, is the relationship with the audience. She really is interested in having an exchange, having a dialogue with our audience. It's less about, you know, we are putting on something, you are watching something, but it's more you and I are doing something together in this moment. So the form of theater is incredibly important for the stories that she's telling. You couldn't do this play on screen. It really requires being in a room, being in a theatrical space.
Well, you are directing Dead Man's Cell Phone, and it opens January 29th and runs through February 15th. And for more info, as we talk about the season at Profile, you can visit profiletheater.org and also have links to them and information at stageandstudio.org. Now, how does Dead Man's Cell Phone connect with the other three plays that you're doing here? Let's start with the next one, which sounds very intriguing to me. It's called In the Next Room or The Vibrator Play.
Yeah.
And it's really about freeing women from Victorian ideas of sexuality. sexuality.
That's exactly right.
And it's set in that time, like
it is.
At the time that electricity was invented.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Interesting ways, things to do with electricity, I guess.
That's right. Well, it really is about representations of women and what we were expected to be like and how we were expected to function in the world. It deals with some issues of race and some issues of class as well. And, you know, it's a great question as to how all of these plays link together. The truth is they link together because they were written by the same person. When you see all of the plays together, I think you get a really interesting view and a deep view of who our featured writer is. And in this case, I think you see things that Sarah Rule is interested in throughout her plays. But what's also really interesting is how they're very different and how you can make links between Dead Man's Cell Phone and In the Next Room or the Vibrator Play, and that they're both dealing with newfangled technology and representations
there
of women.
Yeah, yeah.
And how women are kind of dealt with by society. But they're also incredibly different. A Dead Man's Cell Phone is a comedy. Vibrator Play is very funny, but I wouldn't necessarily call it a comedy. One takes place in many, many, many different places, including the afterlife with Dead Man's Cell Phone. Vibrator Play is one set. It's one.
It's straightforward.
It's straightforward. Speed.
Now, is it set in England?
No, it's actually American.
It's set in
just north of New York City, the turn of the century.
Well, you know, I think this is another one of the plays that you hear about a lot, mm-hmm. especially because it has a provocative title. But another thing that seems to connect, and we'll see if the rest of them do, is the fact that the women are protagonists.
Yep.
And you know that. In of itself is a statement, because it's not often.
It's very, very much
in theater.
Rarely. Too rarely.
Right, right. You're not somebody's wife, mother, mm-hmm. grandmother, mm-hmm. best friend.
Yeah, and it's also wonderful in Sarah's plays that I think that a lot of her pieces lend themselves to thinking outside of the box for casting, both in terms of age. You also don't get to see a lot of women over the age of 50 on stage very often, unless they're playing someone's grandmother.
Exactly.
Sarah's plays allow for that and, in fact, welcome that. She also allows for very differently abled people, different types of bodies, different races, different ethnicities. Not in all of her plays, but Vibrator Play is very specific. Because there is actually conversation about race in the play that's very specific. But in some of our later plays, and also with Dead Man's Cell Phone, you can open up what the expectations of casting, of what the stories that we're telling on stage in America are. And the fact that we have a lot of female protagonists this year is a wonderful, it's a wonderful thing. And
it's a wonderful thing. And you know, to sort of harken back to the Golden Globes, Maggie Gyllenhaal, who won an award for an incredible performance in The Honorable Woman, said something about it wasn't so much about powerful women, but actual women.
Actual women. Yeah,
you know, that
absolutely.
I actually
have been thinking about that, her performance recently while I've been working on this play, because
it's phenomenal.
It's so phenomenal. And it's, you know, it's completely multi-layered, 360 degrees of a human being. And that is, I think, what we're often missing on stage in roles for women.
Real women.
And
real
that is
women.
What we get in Sarah Rule's season.
The Vibrator Play is happening actually this summer, June 11th through June 28th, the whole month of June almost. And later in the fall, you have Samantha Vandemerva directing the Passion Plays. Mm-hmm. So what is... Is it religious? What is the Passion Plays?
It is religious in the sense that it's an epic piece of Sarah's that she wrote actually over many, many years. It's a 3-part epic. Profile is presenting this in collaboration with Shaking the Tree. We are doing the first 2 parts of Passion Play, and Samantha at Shaking the Tree will present the 3rd part.
Oh, nice.
With the same cast and same design team.
Wonderful.
So you'll get to see the whole epic. And what it is it's actually 3 acts of characters over time. We have 16th century in Northern England, we have 1934 in Bavaria, and then we have 1969 in South Dakota. And it's people presenting the Passion Play, so the Passion of the Christ. Is it religious? In the sense that it deals with religious topics, yes. But it's really about people in a community trying to express a story and their own experiences within that. And we do have some ringers. Queen Elizabeth makes an appearance. Hitler makes an appearance.
Oh,
Reagan
no.
makes an appearance.
Oh, no.
So
it sounds very ambitious.
It's incredibly ambitious. It's a huge project for us. It will happen both on the West Side and on the East Side. And we will travel through 500 years of time. So
that's
just
all.
A small
that's
undertaking.
All. Yeah. Well, and in November, because your season is actually the calendar
the
year,
calendar
which
year.
Is also unusual because people mm-hmm. could get season subscriptions now. We can't go into prices and
that's
stuff,
right.
but
yeah.
you can get that info at profiletheater.org. And in November, to close out the season, you have Orlando, directed by Matthew Zarebski. And this one is based on the Virginia Woolf novel about a gender-bending character through time who starts off as an Englishman and then transforms into female characters. I actually saw a movie of this version of this in 92 with Tilda Swinton, and it's an amazing story.
It is.
So is it similar to that? I mean, is this play?
It is in the sense that it is taken, they're both taken from the novel, and they both have a strong female protagonist who starts as a man and transforms into a woman, and it deals with that. It's not you won't be seeing a stage version of the film, but a lot of the imagery is the same because it is, of course, taken from Virginia Woolf's novel.
Well, I'm Dimae Roberts, stage and studio, talking with Audriana Bear of Profile Theater. And I don't want to characterize this as a woman's season, but, you know, that's what often happens. It happens to be a woman's playwright who has these incredible characters and some incredible stories. Mm-hmm. So I want to say kudos to you for choosing a woman, most
Thank
definitely,
you.
As a playwright. But, you know, it hasn't happened very often at Profile. This
it
is
sure
the
hasn't.
Third time.
That's right.
Are we going to see that change?
Yes.
Well, that's a good answer. You don't mince words, do you? You just go right for it. That's awesome. That's awesome. I think that it's often overlooked, you know, just like actresses are overlooked, just like female directors are overlooked.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, and we do seriously have the secret elephant in the room in the American theater is that only about 20% of the freelance directing in the country is done by women, and only about 20% of the artistic directors in the country are women. So we're still not anywhere close to parity. And until we acknowledge that and work towards that, we're going to have to keep pushing.
I'll have to bring you back for another show on gender equity. There's actually a petition going around to urge the Obama administration. Have you heard about this?
Mm-hmm.
The Obama administration to enact legislation guaranteeing equal access and opportunities in government-funded arts organizations. That means half and half.
Yes.
What do you think about that?
I think it's sad in 2015 that we have to write a petition to the United States government to have something as basic as equity.
Well, it seems to me that theater, film, the entertainment industry, you know, you can openly discriminate based on gender, sex, body
absolutely.
Type.
And I think it's a question
race,
of, yes, absolutely. And I think it's really about making a dedicated effort, those of us in leadership positions, taking a risk to say, we are going to work on this issue and make it at the forefront of our dialogues. That doesn't necessarily mean we're going to always have equal roles for people of color or equal roles for women, as much as I would like to see that happen, but we are going to put it at the forefront of our conversation and start the dialogue. And if we can at least hold that conversation loud and happening, maybe we can start to see some real change. Of course, I would like government-mandated equality, but I feel like we have that, and we're still far
behind. We're just
behind.
Not making use of it,
we're
too.
Not.
And I think that's what this petition is going. And I'll post the link at stageandstudio.org for this petition if people are interested. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to shake things up.
I hope so.
If you know, so far there's almost 100,000 signatures across the country. So let's see how that if that makes any difference. We're running out of time here, but I do want people to go to profiletheater.org and stageandstudio.org because you also have reading. readings coming up. Yeah. One that I want to mention real quickly is an adaptation of Three Sisters that's at Reed College in March. And then there's another one, The Oldest Boy, in October, which is interesting to me because it's about Tibetan culture through the eyes of this young mom. I think the reading series is also important to profile, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Our reading series is called In Dialogue, and it is part of our program to expand the prism through which we view our featured writer's work. We do staged readings and also pre-show lectures, post-show discussions, music performances, etc., to open that dialogue with our audience. And our staged reading series in particular is very exciting because not only do we do additional readings by our featured writer, but we have new work by writers in conversation with our featured writer's body of work. So this year we have two plays by women writers that are not Sarah Rule that are somehow related to her body of work or her style of writing.
Wonderful. Well, so much going on at Profile Theater. Make sure you catch the opening of Profile Theater season with Dead Man's Cell Phone by Sarah Rule. And that runs January 29th through the February 15th at Artist Repertory Theater's Morrison Stage Space at 1515 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland. For tickets, visit profiletheater.org or call 503-242-0080, 242-0080. And I have all that info at stageandstudio.org as well. What a great time talking with you and a great show.
Thank
you for joining me today, Audrey. Adriana Bear, Artistic Director of Profile Theater. It's so good to meet you, too.
Likewise. Thanks for having me in.
Well, before we go, a shout-out for Portland Story Theater's production of The Essex by Lawrence Howard. It's the true story of survival when a Nantucket whaling ship was rammed and sunk by a sperm whale in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and it left 20 men on three small boats with little food or water. This is the story that inspired Melville to write Moby Dick. The Essex runs January 23rd and 24th at Alberta Abbey. It's a new space. It sounds interesting. In Portland. It's located at 126 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. For more info, visit portlandstorytheater.com. That's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. I'll have the show online later today at stageandstudio.org, as well as the podcast on iTunes. You can like us on facebook.com/stage_studio or tweet me at @StageTheLetterAndStudio. Thank you for listening and being part of Stage and Studio today. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts.